is no sign of your intelligence to confirm that all religions are going up the same mountain. You have to deny the fundamental teachings of the religions of the world to come to that conclusion.
Craig Parton, author of the Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Religion on Trial, Cross-Examining Religious Truth Claims.
They may all be wrong, but do any of them ask to be tested by the canons of evidence used in the law, science, and history?
Learn more about Religion on Trial at issuesetc.org.
Sometimes it's said that the court is an anti-majoritarian institution, that we defend rights of minorities. Well, that's true. But over time, over history, it's important that the majority accept those decisions as correct. And over time, it seems to me that most of the decisions of the Supreme Court have found acceptance in the bench and in the bar and, what's the most important, in the American people.
That's Justice Anthony Kennedy speaking at the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals Judicial Conference in 2016. Today he announced that as of the end of July, he would be retiring from the U.S. Supreme Court. This isn't just any justice, and it isn't just any retirement. And of course, given the times we're living in, replacing him will be a spectacle at the very least. Welcome back to Issues Etc. on this Wednesday afternoon, June the 27th. We're going to be talking about Justice Anthony Kennedy's retirement from the Supreme Court. Joining us to talk about it, Dr. Robert George. He's a regular guest. He holds the McCormick Chair in Jurisprudence and is the founding director of the James Madison Program at Princeton University. He's author of several books, including his latest, Conscience and Its Enemies, Confronting the Dogmas of Liberal Secularism. Dr. George, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Oh, thanks so much, Todd. It's good to be back on the show.
What was Justice Kennedy's high point on the Supreme Court, in your opinion?
Well, I have to admit to you and your listeners, Todd, that I am not an admirer of Justice Kennedy's jurisprudence. I find it difficult to find anything that counts really as a high point. He did, fortunately, very recently, get the right outcome and at least some of the correct reasoning in the Masterpiece Bakeshop case. That's the very important religious liberty case that tested the authority of a state agency, the Colorado Civil Rights Commission, to, in effect, require a cake designer, a cake baker and designer, to contribute his artistic talents to making a cake for a same-sex wedding, which was contrary to his conscience as a Christian believer. So kudos to Kennedy for getting that outcome right. And as I say, part of the reasoning, it was a religious liberty argument. But I find very little to commend in Justice Kennedy's jurisprudence beyond that. Sometimes, as in the Masterpiece Bakeshop cake, he joined an opinion that I thought was on the right side of the issue that got the outcome right. But even in those cases, I rarely found his reasoning to be especially sharp.
What was his low point, would you say?
There were two huge ones. One was imposing same-sex marriage on the entire nation under the pretext of interpreting the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment to the Constitution. The 14th Amendment was ratified in 1868. It simply says that no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. The clear and plain meaning of that is that no one can be executed, that is, deprived of life, imprisoned, deprived of liberty, or subjected to a monetary fine or forfeiture, deprived of property, without a fair trial, an opportunity to confront witnesses against one, a presumption of innocence, a judge who's not the same person as the prosecutor, and so forth. Justice Kennedy took that to mean that the states could not honor the judgment of their citizens, operating through the ordinary processes of deliberative democracy, that marriage is the conjugal union of husband and wife, what marriage has long been understood to be in the West and in many other places. That was one low point. The other was when he joined in reaffirming the central holding of Roe versus Wade, imposing the dreadful abortion license on the entire nation. The Supreme Court had an opportunity to overrule that horrific decision of Roe versus Wade twice in the late 1980s and early 1990s. The key moment was in 1992, if I remember the year correctly, when in the case of Planned Parenthood of Pennsylvania against Casey, Governor Robert D. Casey, Kennedy joined Justices Souter and O'Connor in a plurality opinion. It was basically reaffirming the fundamental holding of Roe versus Wade. Once again, misinterpreting the due process clause of the 14th Amendment, this time misinterpreting it as requiring that state laws protecting unborn children be removed from the books.
A frequent guest here on the program, Issues Etc., Molly Hemingway, has stated for years, this is Anthony Kennedy's America and the rest of us just happened to live here. What do you think of that assessment of his time?
Yeah, that's a very short comment of Molly's. I'll tell your listeners what she's referring to there, although many of them probably know it without my explaining it. And that is that Justice Kennedy was the fifth vote to overturn the marriage laws, impose same-sex marriage on the nation. He was the fifth vote to uphold Roe versus Wade, the fifth of nine, the deciding vote to impose the abortion license on the nation, contrary to the will of many, many states, the people of many, many states. So we in America are supposed to be a Republican democracy. We're supposed to rule ourselves. We govern ourselves. Our government is not only of the people, which all government is, and for the people, which all good government is, even if it's the rule of a benign despot, but also by the people, that is, Democratic-Republican government. And yet, who can say that our fundamental laws regarding human life were made by the people? They weren't. They were made by the Supreme Court. And the casting vote, the deciding vote, was Justice Kennedy. Who can say that our marriage law was made by the people? No, our marriage law was made by the Supreme Court in a 5-4 decision with Justice Kennedy deciding the issue. So that's the sense in which Molly is saying that we live in Justice Kennedy's America. He played a crucial key role, the deciding role, in deciding what the law would be on these two fundamental matters.
How would you describe Justice Kennedy's basic judicial philosophy?
Beats me.
Would you care to expand on that?
Well, I don't think he had a judicial philosophy. I don't know what it is. That if Justice Kennedy likes something, it's constitutional. If Justice Kennedy doesn't like something, it's unconstitutional. That's scarcely a judicial philosophy. He was not an originalist. That's for sure. He didn't interpret the Constitution by reference to the original understanding of those who ratified the Constitution. He did not take a plain meaning approach. He was not a textualist. He would read things into the Constitution. He would read things out of the Constitution. I don't know. It was very often very difficult to predict how he would vote because there was no coherent judicial philosophy that would give you some guidance. And that unpredictability was not a virtue. It was not a virtue. It was too much like whimsical decision making. I really think what it came down to is, in his gut, if he liked something, he declared it to be constitutionally permissible. And if he didn't like it, he declared it to be unconstitutional. Again, I'm sorry to be harsh on the man. He served our nation for many, many years. It's not easy to be a Supreme Court justice. He served until he was 80 years old. I honor him for that. But I'm not going to sit here and tell your listeners that I think he had a coherent judicial philosophy. He did not, and I can't tell your listeners that he was a person who really honored the Constitution in carrying out his duties. As far as I'm concerned, he did not. Again, I'm terribly sorry to have to say that, but that's the way it is.
You mentioned earlier the latest decision which he played a part on Masterpiece Cake Shop, but was he consistent, his track record consistent on religious liberty, as far as you can tell?
Well, again, to say consistent means that I could identify some principle in accordance with which he decided these cases. And unlike Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, or unlike Justice Antonin Scalia, the late Antonin Scalia, both of whom had principles that I could identify that would make sense of the rulings that they handed down in most cases. Justice Kennedy did not have, as far as I could see, any such guiding principles. So we got something much more like a bricolage.
Does Anthony Kennedy's retirement during a Donald Trump presidency mean the end of Roe v. Wade?
We don't know. Frankly, President Trump has surprised me with the excellent quality, indeed outstanding quality, of his judicial nominees, including his first nominee to the Supreme Court, Justice Neil Gorsuch, who is a tremendous justice. He's got it in him. He's at the beginning of what will be, I think, a long career if all goes well with his health and so forth, and he could end up being truly a great justice. So President Trump, of whom I have been fiercely critical and about whom I still have many criticisms, has a great record so far on judicial appointments. If he makes a nomination that is consistent with the nominees he has put on the various federal courts so far, then Roe versus Wade will go, because Roe versus Wade is very poor constitutional law. Indeed, it's not constitutional law at all. It's just a pure manufacture by justices. It's a so-called right that's been constructed out of whole cloth, just conjured. There's no constitutional basis for it. There's no basis in the text or logic or structure or historical understanding of the Constitution. And any constitutionalist judge, any good judge, is going to understand that and is going to vote to overturn Roe versus Wade. And I believe, can't say for sure, but I believe there are already 4 votes on the court to overturn it. This would be the 5th. So if a pro-life state like Missouri or Louisiana or another state restores abortion statutes that protect the unborn child, I believe that 4 justices right now are prepared to uphold that statute and overturn Roe versus Wade. If President Trump nominates, and if the Senate confirms, a true constitutionalist like the people he's been putting on the courts, there's your 5th vote, and Roe would end up on the dustbin of history, which is where it belongs.
Anthony Kennedy was President Reagan's 3rd pick to replace Justice Lewis Powell back in 1987. How different would our country be had Reagan's 1st pick, Robert Bork, been approved by the Senate?
Let's go back to Molly Hemingway's very telling quotation. We live in Anthony Kennedy's America. Had Bork been confirmed, we wouldn't live in Anthony Kennedy's America. We'd be living under the Constitution bequeathed to us by James Madison and John Jay and Alexander Hamilton and the other founders of our nation. We'd be living in their America, which is where I want to live, at least until our fellow citizens decide that they actually want to amend the Constitution, which I hope they will, not in any wholesale manner. Judge Bork, should have been Justice Bork, Judge Bork was a constitutionalist. So he would have interpreted the Constitution by reference to the text and its logic and structure and original understanding. We would not have Roe versus Wade. It would have been gone by the late 80s. We certainly would not have the Obergefell ruling, the marriage ruling. It would be a very different America in some fundamental ways, and it would be a more Republican-Democratic America. I'm using small r and small d. It would be an America in which we, the people, exercise greater authority and more responsibility for our laws. We would have to decide what our laws of marriage should be, not 9 lawyers, all of whom went to either Harvard or Yale law schools. We would decide what our law would be when it came to the protection of unborn children, not 9 lawyers on the Supreme Court. That's how different the America would be.
Dr. Robert George holds the McCormick Chair in Jurisprudence and is founding director of the James Madison Program at Princeton University. He's author of several books, including his latest, Conscience and Its Enemies, Confronting the Dogmas of Liberal Secularism. You can purchase it under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Dr. George, thank you very much for your time.
My pleasure, Todd. Thanks for being in touch.
When we come back, it's time to talk to Terry Mattingly about media coverage of religious liberty and the Supreme Court's decision recently to uphold President Trump's travel ban. He's depressed, Terry is, and he'll tell us why right after the break.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
With so many religions in the world today, how can we know which, if any, is true? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for June is Religion on Trial, Examining Religious Truth Claims. It's written by regular guest Craig Parton. Learn more about Religion on Trial at IssuesETC.org or call Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Religion on Trial by Craig Parton.
Thanks to generous supporters, tuition for all incoming residential pastoral ministry and deaconess students at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, will be paid in full. Hi, this is Dr. Lawrence Rast, president of Concordia Theological Seminary. Learn more about studying for the vocations of pastor or deaconess in the 2018-19 academic year at ctsfw.edu.